When I was, well, first of all, my birthday is 3 days after Christmas, so my mom, when I was really young, decided I want to make sure that my son feels celebrated on his birthday and not just like, you know, oh, whatever, we'll just wrap everything up in Christmas. Now, if you're somebody who has a close to Christmas birthday and your parents did it opposite, I'm sorry. I know I have friends who were in that situation where it was like, we'll just sort of wrap you up in Christmas, and that doesn't feel very special. But my mom made a really big deal of it, so she would like take down all the Christmas decorations before my birthday and then like set up birthday stuff to make sure I knew like this was my birthday, it was a special day. But I remember one year we were up in the, I have relatives up in the mountains, and it wasn't a very big spot, so it was like, you know, a little bit of a, like, couple bedrooms, a little living room space, and then, like, the dining room, and there really wasn't anything else. So, and I mean, there's a kitchen, all small. And she had totally decked out the entire living room area, or the dining room area, which was, like, just all these streamers, balloons, stuff, happy birthday, everything. And the bedrooms, you, to get to the living room, you had to walk right by all these decorations. And me and my, you know, super observant self as a kid, I got up, walked right by all the things, sat down, and just sat there like this. And my mom and everybody's like, happy birthday. And I had totally missed all the decorations, everything special that my mom had did, and she had to, like, point out, hey, look at this stuff I did for you. I think that was the last year she did that. And I was like, it's okay. I'm fine with the Christmas tree. But today we're going to take a look at this. How sometimes, even if we're right next to Jesus, even if we're serving Jesus, we can still miss who he is and what he's doing. Even if we're right next to him, we can still miss what Jesus is doing. And so we're going to take a look at Mark chapter 6, starting in verse 30. We've been in this series in Mark this summer, looking at what Jesus is doing, just as some background here before we dive in. Jesus has been doing miracles all throughout, including like healing chronic diseases, raising people from the dead. The disciples, his followers of 12 people who were with him everywhere he went, pretty much, they've been seeing all of this, experiencing all of this. Earlier, they were even in the middle of a massive storm that was about to capsize the boat, and Jesus came in with a word, calmed all of nature, and everything was calm. The disciples have witnessed all of these things. Not only that, but actually just prior to this, Jesus had said, I'm going to send you, his 12 followers, like, I'm sending you out with my authority to go proclaim and teach people about who, what the kingdom of heaven is like. And when he sends them out, they actually cast out demons and heal sick people and do things that they're like, wow, these would be miracles. Things that are happening. And so they sent them all out for that. And actually, they're just coming back from that. So for a while, you know, for a season, they're with Jesus like every waking moment, except for when he hides from them and runs off to go pray. They're with him every moment. But then here's a season where he actually sends them off by themselves, and then they're coming back. And so we're going to kind of look at this portion of scripture here. So verse 30 says, the apostles, that's also disciples, is 12 guys, gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Now, just so we're understanding what's happening, they're here, they're excited to see Jesus, they're trying to tell him, this is what happened. But so many people are there, they can't even eat, right? So they get there, they can't even eat, they're so crowded, there's so many people, they're excited to be back with Jesus. Jesus is excited to be with them, and he says, hey, there's so many people here, let's go away, come away with me and rest. We can rejuvenate, spend time together, you know, fellowship together, share these stories, enjoy a nice quiet meal. That's what Jesus says. So it says, so they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. Again, remember, they're looking to be alone. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. So again, remember, They went to this place to get away from the crowds so that he could be alone with his disciples and hear what they had to say and probably eat a meal because they hadn't had a chance to eat. And yet all these people somehow know, they predict where they're going to go, running on feet, get to a huge crowd so that once they get off the boat, they just see them. They're there. Right? And Jesus sees them, has compassion on them, and just begins to teach them. Right? So then it says, by this time, after he's been teaching them, it was late in the day. So his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said. And it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered, you give them something to eat. They said to him, that would take 8 months of a man's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? How many loaves do you have? He asked. Go and see. When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So he sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples and set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. So what we see here happening is the disciples come and say, hey, send them away so they can go eat. They don't have food. Jesus is like, what you got? We got 5 pieces of bread, 5 fish. Jesus is like, that's enough. He makes do. They have 12 baskets full of food left over after feeding at least 5,000 people. That's just the men. So they didn't count the women and the children, so it's probably over 10,000 people, but we don't know. It's a lot of people. So 5 loaves of bread, 2 fish, multiplied to feed so many people, clearly an act of God, a miracle, food from nowhere, basically. Right? Awesome thing. They're picking up all this food. So that's what happens. They see that, and it says the disciples are actually the ones picking up all the leftovers. So they would have known how much food was there, right? So they were the firsthand witness of everything that's happening. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. When evening came, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. About the 4th watch of the night, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. See, what we see here is this, and actually when it says completely amazed, this is like one of those moments where English just doesn't do justice to the original language. The Greek here, completely amazed, is kind of really this idea of like exceedingly, abundantly, astounded, baffled, completely like do not understand what just happened, right? That's what this like idea of completely amazed is. It's not just like an awe thing of like, oh wow, God, you're awesome. No, it's like a, I cannot believe what just happened. I have no words for it. I cannot comprehend it. I had no expectation for it. And even though I've just witnessed it, I still cannot believe what just happened. That's the expression. That's kind of how the disciples are reacting in this moment. And it says here, they reacted this way because they didn't get what just happened. They totally missed what Jesus was doing in the last like 12 hours of their lives. They completely missed it. And it says they missed it because their hearts were hardened, which means they were not able to receive or hear or witness who Jesus was or what he was doing because they were not in a place for themselves to be able to see and experience who Jesus was and what he was doing. Now, before we give them a hard time, because I think, you know, so many of the times when I've read the Bible, when if I'm just reading it fast, you read it and you think so many times, like, man, you people are knuckleheads. Like, didn't you get this? Like, you have already cast out demons. You've already healed people because he sent you out. Now you're here. You see this amazing miracle of food created from less food to feed thousands of people. And you even got to, like, see it firsthand and see there's 12 basketfuls of extra food left over. Like, you would think, that's just a cursory reading. Like, obviously, you would be astounded and amazed and be like, this guy is so cool, he can do anything. And yet, that's not their experience. So they've seen all of that. And actually, it's also important to recognize that, you know, the authors of the Bible actually, like, knew what they were doing as they're writing. They do things intentionally. And I think as we're reading this, we're supposed to be reminded of another story on the lake. When there's the big storm, and they're frightened, and they're scared, and God comes, and he wakes up, and he calms everything with the word. And it's interesting, as you read this, you kind of get a similar feel of like, oh, okay, here's some similarities and differences. One similarity is they're still kind of stuck in facing the waves, and God still calms it. One difference is, while they still don't really get who Jesus is, they're not as scared here. So there's progress, okay? Let's give these guys a break. There's some progress. They're not as terrified of Jesus anymore. They were scared for a moment when they thought he was a ghost, but once they realized it was him, they calmed down. But they still don't get who he is. Even though they've been casting out demons in his name and healing people in his name, they still haven't got who he is. And I want to say that I think part of the reason why is that the disciples really aren't focused on Jesus. You say that might sound silly. Like, what do you mean? They've been with him this whole time. They've given up their lives to follow after him. And yet, if you really look at what's happening, I think you can kind of see that they're really not focused on him. There are other things that are taking their consideration, and there's other things that are filling their minds and their hearts that I think distracts them from what Jesus is actually doing and saying. So we don't actually know, because we don't actually have the memoirs of the apostles that say, this is what I was feeling in this moment. But I want to give you a little insight as far as how I see this a bit. Because when I put myself in the disciples' shoes a little bit, because this is what you, when you're reading the scriptures, this is a good practice, is to try and put yourselves like, how would I feel if I was there? Okay? That doesn't mean that it's gospel that's exactly right, but it helps us understand what was going on for these people. See, if I was the disciples, I would be sitting here, I'm excited to tell Jesus everything that was cool that just happened. I am pumped. And I get to be with Jesus, but there's so many people crowding us out. We can't even have a meal. We can't be quiet together. And he finally says, let's go alone to be and rest. And I'm like, awesome. I'm so excited for this. And then when we get there and we see a crowd, if I was one of those guys in that boat, I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like, we just left to get away from you people, and you're still here. Can't you give us like a moment's peace? And then knowing, like, I feel like this is what it would be, is like a collective groan among the disciples, that as you see Jesus, you see the crowd and you see Jesus get out, you're like, he's going to talk to them, isn't he? Like, he's going to start teaching them, isn't he? Sure enough, he's like, okay, and he's talking to them. Now, I don't know, obviously, but as a pastor's kid in MK, a missionary kid, I feel like this is what the disciples are doing in the, hey, send them away to get food. This is my take on it, okay? So this is completely just me. But I feel like these guys are like, we're done. How are we going to get rid of all these people? How are we going to get Jesus to walk away from all these people that he's clearly, you know, compassionate, loving, all this great stuff? Okay, but how are we going to get him back for us? I know. We'll use his compassion against them. We're going to say, they're hungry. Let them go eat. Right? That's kind of how I see part of this, is them coming up being like, hey, I know, hey, Jesus, come on, you got to let them go eat. Come on, you know, they're going to be hungry. We don't have food here. Let's go send them off. And so when Jesus is like, you feed them, they're like, oh, come on. Like, that's not what you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say, like, oh, you're right. They got to go eat. Yeah, let's go let them eat so we can eat. We can be alone together. But that's not what Jesus does. And so they see that. Then they get to pick up 12 baskets of food. Right? You're like, oh, you get to see this amazing thing. Or it's the disciples there being like, I can't believe I have to pick up all this food. Like, why do I have to pick up all the food? Why can't these 4,000 men pick up their own food and put it in some baskets? Like, why are we the ones walking around putting stuff in a basket and doing all this? And then to top that all off, you've just done all that work. And then Jesus is like, hey, get in the boat and start rowing. The wind's not looking so good right now, Jesus. That's okay, just start going. Then, for hours, they make almost no headway. And these are fishermen. These are guys, they know what they're doing. They get stuck in the middle. They're going basically nowhere with all this straining and rowing. It's so long that Jesus is able to walk faster than they can row the boat to catch up to them. And it's like, oh, he's going to pass them by. I don't know if he's actually going to pass them by if they didn't see him, or if it's just a phrase of like, hey, I'm kind of here or what. But either way, think about how aggravating that would be. If you're like, we've been rowing for hours and you're just going to waltz on by. No, the reason why I'm explaining all these things is that here's the thing. I think the apostles, the disciples, these guys had other things in their mind. Were they all bad and evil? No. Some of them are just very human things. Things they wanted. They wanted to be with Jesus themselves. They wanted to talk to him. They wanted to enjoy a quieter moment with him after having been away. And that was all ruined by these other people. And because of that, I think it shifts the way they see the entire scenario with the loaves. Yeah, it's a miracle. They've seen other miracles. But instead of really listening and paying attention to who Jesus is and what he is doing, I think they're distracted by all the other things that they would like in this situation. And so they completely miss who Jesus is and what he is declaring himself to be in this instance. So even though they're the ones serving God in this moment, they're the ones picking up the bread, they're the ones finding that there's bread and fish, they're the ones doing all these things, right? They were the ones healing people and casting out demons. They're his right-hand people. They don't get it. They've missed it. They've missed it completely. And before we're too hard on them, I just even want to say, I resonate with this as a pastor. I gotta confess, it is often hard to focus on Jesus when I come to church. The reason for that is simple. Like today. Today's a great example. Normally we have God's garden in the cafeteria. Today, that ain't an option. We were supposed to have the nursery available. That wasn't open. So we have to find another place to do that. In case you haven't walked over, if you have no kids, it's a bit of a walk to get all the way over there. So I've had to walk back and forth there at least 10 times today, this morning, which is not, it's okay, it's not that bad, but you're walking back and forth. There are things to set up. There are things to do. There's always things to do. There's a long list of people in my mind that I'm like, I have to talk to all these people. Maybe it's for small groups. Maybe it's for youth group. Maybe it's for missions. I don't know, but one of these things. Maybe it's for something else, and it's always in there, which means that when I come to church, there is a huge agenda in my mind that I am trying to accomplish, and they are supposed to be things for God. But that is not actually the same as me coming here to focus on God. And so for me, it's actually, I resonate with this. I can see this and go, yeah, I get this. I get this. I get that I can be so focused on things I'm doing for God that I could miss God completely in the midst of it. Or so focused on other things that are happening that even as I come in, I'm just like, I've missed him completely. And so I think there's something here where we need to kind of evaluate. Are we focused on Jesus? Like actually focused on Jesus? Or are we focused on other things? Are we focused on what we're doing for him? Are we focused on just our lives or other things or dreams or desires that we have? Or are we actually focused on Jesus? Because when we focus on other things, eventually our hearts get hardened and it's hard to see and witness who Jesus is and what he's doing. And I think there's something for us today where we need to begin to press in to say, I want to focus on Jesus. I'm not going to focus on my circumstances. I'm not going to focus on these other things. I want to focus on Jesus. So I just want to briefly mention here what the disciples miss, okay? It's interesting. I think Mark is intentionally doing this. All this passage, this story is mentioned in all the four Gospels. But Mark's is really more about the disciples. It kind of follows their story through this more than the teachings of Jesus. It just says he taught them for a long time. Some of the other places, it goes more into depth in what Jesus actually teaches them in this during this story. But what we see here is I kind of want to see, we see Jesus reveal himself as kind of three things here, just real quick. One is he reveals that he's love. Not just loving, he is love. In 1 John 4, it says that God is love, okay? It's his nature. It is who he is. Remember, Jesus, like the disciples, had left to be alone. There was a purpose, and the purpose was thwarted when they saw the people. But Jesus' response, because he is love, is he sees these people and he's brokenhearted for them. He's full of compassion and love and mercy and grace. It is who he is. And so when he sees these people, he goes, I have to talk to them. I have to talk to them about who God is and the way of the kingdom and how their lives can be better with God. And so he begins to talk to them and to teach them because he loves them. And I think the disciples miss that piece. They miss how God is love. Now, if they had known that in the boat, they would have been so cognizant of the reality that here is our loving friend who cares for us and cares what we're going through and knows what we're going through and loves us so deeply that his very presence with us is going to change things because he is so loving and caring. And if he's present with us, that love is going to be tangibly felt for us. So we see that Jesus is love. We also see that Jesus is Lord. There's no other explanation for food from nothing. All this food for probably 10,000 plus people from just a few things. That's just a God act. God act. Here he goes. Here, I can just do this thing. I am all powerful. He's revealing his supremacy, his power, his sovereignty over the situation, that he can do what needs to be done. And so he's revealing this. And not just that, but especially the fact that it's bread. There's even symbolism here. Let's even unpack more in some of the other stories or recounts of this in the Gospels. But even today in lots of parts of the world, but especially in that season for this group of people when the Bible was written, bread is a sign of life. It's a symbol for life because without bread you die. So even the fact that he is creating bread, there's just something here that's important and powerful. He's just kind of declaring that, which kind of leads us to the last thing here I want to say is that Jesus is life. Even with the bread symbol, the fact that he's created this is the way that he's saying, I am the source of life. I am life for you. I am all that you need for life. And so what we kind of see is this awesome picture of who Jesus is he's love, he's Lord, he's life, which means he's really all that you need for life. And it's not just like, you're going to get me through, but like, no, you're going to love, because you are love, you're going to care for me, you're going to know what I'm going through, and you're going to love on me, and because you're Lord, you are all powerful, and you'll be able to take care of me, and step into the situation, and protect me, or provide for me. You are Lord, you can do these things, and because you are life, I know that I will have life. And you will provide this. And if we have that picture of who Jesus is, and if the disciples had that picture of who Jesus is, when they see him on the boat, instead of being like completely and totally astounded and just dumbstruck at what happens, they would be awed. They'd be like, oh yeah, that's so cool, because it's so cool you just stopped the wind and the waves and all that stuff. That is cool. It's always going to be cool. But there would have been a expectation, like, yes, because that's who you are, because you love me, and you're all powerful, you're Lord, and you have life. So yes, you calming the waters, while not necessarily something I foresaw, is something that now that you've done it, I go, yeah, that's in your nature. I get that. I get who you are. But they don't get it because they haven't focused on him. And they've missed who he was revealing himself to be just hours before. And not just then, but over the course of time, even with the last storm that happened, it's a similar kind of situation. See, the reality is this. There are so many things in this life to make us focus on. There's the good things, like I mentioned, of even just serving God that we can focus on and we can do good things. Do good works, even just go to good jobs and do lots of good, busy things. And we can do all of those things, and that can be our focus. And if we're totally focused on those things, those things can keep us from understanding who God is and seeing what He's about and understanding what He's trying to tell us. Or just missing the fact that He showed up and is in the spot and saying, here I am. This is what I'm doing. This is where I'm at. But there's also a reality of life is broken. We live in a time where God still allows for sin to be here as people are given the option to say yes to Him or not. Which means that we live in a broken world full of brokenness and suffering and pain. But the reality is when we focus on the brokenness, when we focus on the pain, when we focus on those things become so large and we often begin to then just get like, I can't even imagine how God could let this happen or where is God in this midst, not realizing that we haven't actually focused on Jesus to see where He's at. We focused on the bad and said, you couldn't be here. The reality is when you focus on Him, you see where He's at in the midst of the pain and the suffering. And it doesn't always mean the pain and the suffering goes away. But His presence as love, Lord, and life are manifested as you focus on Him and you realize this still sucks. But He is good and He's for me and He's with me and He is what I need to get through this. But when we don't focus on Him, we miss it. And if we keep not focusing on Him for long enough, sometimes that's when we become disillusioned, angry, and walk away from who God is. It can happen to any of us. But I think the key is to focus on Him and to say, I may not understand what I'm going through. I may not get everything. I may not get anything. But I'm going to choose to believe that you are who you say you are. I'm going to choose to focus on who you've revealed yourself to be, both in Scripture and in the history of my life, and believe that you are loving, that you're good, that you're awesome, that you are God, that you are powerful, that you are sovereign. I'm going to choose to believe that you are for life, that you are the source of life. And that as we focus on who He is, it changes us. It doesn't always change our circumstances. It changes us and how we see our circumstances and how we live through our circumstances. It reminds me of, I used to run cross country. I was horrible. I did it because my friends did it. And they used to say things like, they made up the stats all the time. They would say things like, running is 10% physical and 80% mental, or they would make up all kinds of things. And you're always going to be like, I'm pretty sure the physical is more than that, but actually there was some truth there because I remember like, you know, my friends and I, we were kind of like the same build, same size, you know, everything was kind of basically the same. They were awesome. I was not. And the main difference was they actually like ran hard and I didn't. But I remember that part of that was just, they were like, hey, I'm going to do this. But for me, even I remember like we would be told, oh, hey, there was this one run. I remember they're like, we're going to run from the school up to this ruined castle on top of the hill. I grew up in Black Forest, Germany, if that doesn't make sense. So there you go. And it was 4 kilometers up and then 4 kilometers back down. I remember running up, starting to run up this hill and thinking like, what did I sign up for? And just thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And you start to get like, you know, pained and like your breathing's heavy and you just start to be like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I remember the more I thought about my pain and my discomfort, the more I was like, I'm going to quit right now. Like, I'm just going to stop and go back and be done. But then because I actually enjoy nature and there's woods and everything, and again, I wasn't running very fast, I just started being like, all right, you know, I'm just going to focus on like the beautiful scenery and just like what's around me. And so I just started kind of going and I was like, okay. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm at the castle. Not all of a sudden, it was like an hour later, but I'm at the castle and I'm like, all right, now I got to turn around and I got to go back. And I'm just like, okay, just seeing the different scenes and this different stuff and getting there and I was like, wow, I like managed to make it through that crappy run and all of those things. And I did that for like 7 years. So I don't know what was wrong with me, but we did it. And I think the reality is this. You can push through so many things as you focus on the things you want. As a runner, I could push through pain. My friends could do it better than me. They wanted it more. But as we focus on Jesus, there's nothing you can't face. As you focus on God, He will be all that you need. As you understand and witness His presence in your life, the fact that He's love and Lord and life, it will change everything. Not because the situation changed. You might still be running that crappy 8-kilometer run. But all of a sudden, everything is different because of who's with you. Let's focus on Jesus. I'm going to invite the worship team up. We're gonna do this as a response today. We're going to have communion. Communion is something that we celebrate of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so we believe that Jesus is God. And He came to be fully man. And we believe that He died for our sins. That's the only way to be in with God eternity forever in heaven. That's what we believe. And so as we celebrate these things, we're remembering not just what Jesus has done on the cross, dying for us, but remembering who He is. Remembering that He loves us. Remembering that He was Lord and is Lord and is able to pay for our sin. That He can save us. Remembering that He's forgiven us. Remembering that He's our healer. Remembering all the things about who Jesus is. I don't know where we're all at this morning. Maybe your life is great right now. It's a good season. Praise God. Thank Him for that. Maybe you're in a season where you're going, I don't know how I'm going to get through tomorrow. Let's focus on Him. I'm not trying to cliche it and say like, oh, everything's great with Jesus, you'll be great. No, I'm saying just focus on Him and see what He reveals. Come to Him. Remember who He is. Remember what He's saying about who He's revealed Himself to be, how He feels about you, where He's at in your life. So normally we say the Apostles' Creed. I think we're going to just skip that for today. It just kind of talks about what we believe and who Jesus is, but today I want us to just kind of press into this, and I just want to open up for you. If you're like, hey, I just need to spend some time refocusing on Christ. The front area is kind of open. If you just want to come and be somewhere where you're saying, I just need to kind of get away and just be there. I can be up here to pray for anyone who feels like they need prayer.